Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 3 of Not About the Weather podcast. My name is Karen, and today I will be your lead host, and I'm joined by Danya and Mitch. Hey, guys, how are you?
Pretty good.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Yay.
I think you're always fabulous, though, Mitch.
I am. Come on. That's very true.
That is true. I don't know if I've ever seen you, like, down, Mitch. You're just always happy and bubbly and enthusiastic.
That's the thing. Like, even when I'm, like, sad, I'm not. Because, like, I don't know. I just, when I start talking to friends, I'm like, oh, yeah, other stuff's going on in the real world. Oh, yeah, I can swear on this podcast. We are explicit. Ooh. Other shit is going on in the world. But I can just chillax with my main bays, and I'm all good.
See, even when you're swearing about it's all like the crappy weird shit, you're like, yes, this is so exciting.
True.
Oh, that's great. Well, I'm really excited about this episode today because we have a lot of really cool things to talk about. And if you guys haven't heard of us before, this is the first time that you're tuning in. This is Not About the Weather. And we are a general podcast where we kind of just talk about stuff, things that get us excited, things that get us angry, and just a group of friends kind of hanging out. This is our social interaction for the week, or at least it is for me sometimes. And yeah, it's just a very laid-back kind of podcast. I'm having a lot of fun doing this. We've only done 2 episodes so far, but I really like the concept. It's really different from the other podcasts that I do because a lot of them are specific to certain topics, and this one is just, I can talk about everything else. And I can talk about fandom stuff, or I can talk about real-world stuff, and it's just fun. I really like it.
Do you like that there's no shelf life? I do like that that's not like when the show ends or when we run out of material to talk about, because I mean, until the world ends, I guess is our shelf life, right?
I mean, technically 2016 is the end of days.
True. Well, you're not wrong.
It feels like it, right?
Yes.
I think David Bowie died, and he started unraveling the threads of the universe with him, so.
Oh, well, that'd be appropriate, though, so I'd appreciate that in a way. I'd be like, you know what? If that's my time to go, I get that.
I heard today, actually, which is kind of weird that we're talking about this, that 2016 is kind of like that scene from Willy Wonka where they go through the tunnel.
Oh my god, it's so perfect.
Right? Like, it starts off fine. You're like, hey, this is kind of neat. This is kind of cool. It's not going too bad. Oh, well, this is different. This is, oh my god, what is happening?
Doesn't basically Augustus go into, that like, little... Like, doesn't Augustus, the big fat kid, right? He goes into the chocolate river and then he gets sucked up the pipe in the most horrific children's movie horror scene of all time.
Yes.
That whole movie is so inappropriate. It does not need to exist. I'm sorry, everyone that loves it, but it scarred the hell out of me as a kid.
Excuse you. I mean, I can't say much because I have very strong feelings about James and the Giant Peach, but, like,
oh my god,
I love Willy Wonka.
Like, Nightmare Before Christmas is kind of, like, the same vein, but it's at least marketed as being darker. Willy Wonka has that dark thing to it, and it doesn't market that. It's like, oh no, there are little orange people in here. It's cute. It's fun. You can eat the lollipop wallpaper. And then all of a sudden, you're brought down into the inferno to be sorted apart by tiny chipmunks deciding if you're a nut or you're not. And it's just so bad. It's so bad.
They were squirrels.
maybe they have chipmunks in the inferno. Squirrels up top. You know, it's like a hierarchy.
Yeah, let's go with that.
But no, Willy Wonka needs to not ever happen. And Karen, you're right.
Before we dive into that hole any further, if you would like to get into contact with us, leave us any comments, any thoughts that you might have, questions, you can visit natwpodcast.com. This is the hub for both Not Another Teen Wolf podcast and Not About the Weather. You can find all of our social media there. But you can also find us at NATW Podcast on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, on Gmail. And for this website and for this podcast in particular, notaboutheweatherpodcast.com, which you can also follow as a Tumblr account, which is pretty exciting.
For all those hip kids out there.
Who oh, yeah. I still have trouble with Tumblr, not going to lie. A little bit better than I was when we first started Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, but It's still not pretty. I ask other people.
I went to a meetup with a load of, like, London fangirls a month and a bit ago. And we were all exchanging, like, what our Tumblr accounts were and what our Twitter accounts were, because, like, we all knew each other by usernames. And I was like, oh, you guys will probably know me from my Twitter account more, because I'm great at Twitter, terrible at Tumblr, because I never updated. And then I was like, I wonder what the last thing I reblogged on there was. And I was like, oh, Star Wars. And they were like, yeah, legit. Yeah, yeah.
Well, today we are bringing you guys, as usual, a grievance to air and obsession to share. And we're going to start with the gripes because I like starting with the bad stuff, getting that out of the way, and ending on a high note. And Tanya, I actually really want you to go first because this is something that I've seen going around and I would like to learn more about it. So please inform us.
Oh, good grief. So, the last couple of days, if you are in the sort of comics fandom or on comics Twitter at all, you will probably have seen a lot of tweets about Chelsea Kane, the writer of the Mockingbird solo comic, basically getting run off Twitter by a load of trolls. It's really horrible because the Mockingbird solo comic was great, but its sales weren't fantastic. And a lot of that's probably down to the fact that Bobby Morse, as much as you may know her and love her from the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. series, is still pretty much a minor character in Marvel comics. So this was her first ever solo comic, so she wasn't a big character, so the sales weren't great, even though the comic was fantastic. And so it got cancelled. The cover for the recent final issue of the Bobby solo series was released online. And it was basically Bobby stood with a t-shirt on that said, and he was like, ask me about my feminist agenda. Now, Bobby has always been a pretty feminist character. She's always, you know, she's always been like that. So it wasn't anything that was unusual. But because of the recent discussion around the Riri comic cover, where Riri, a 15-year-old girl who will be taking over from Iron Man as Ironheart, was drawn on a variant cover, like hypersexualized, and I mean in the sense of like everything was accentuated to the point where it was basically a 15-year-old's head on the body of a much, much older woman. So there was a lot of discourse and discussion about the hypersexualization of women of color. And eventually, due to a lot of that discussion and some of it getting shut down by the comic artist in question, Marvel pulled that cover. So what is believed to have happened is, in retaliation, a load of trolls have basically come from out under their rocks and focused on this feminist cover of Mockingbird to retaliate. And so they basically unleashed a barrage of really horrific trolling comments and harassment at Chelsea Kane, the writer of the Mockingbird comics, to the point where she deleted her Twitter and is now thinking of quitting comics altogether. Now, Chelsea Kane is a novel writer. So she has been writing and in this game for like so long. And this was her first comic gig. This is the first time she'd written for comics. And before she deleted her Twitter account, she was talking about how she never experienced this kind of harassment writing for novels. It was basically the cruelty that comics brings out. And she was just like, I'm done. She said, I'm kind of amazed at the cruelty comics brings out in people. And a lot of people were like, it's not comics, it's not comics. And she was like, yeah, it is. And here's the thing. It is. It absolutely is. Here is a couple of choice comments made. And these are not unusual. If you are involved in any kind of conversation about comics as a woman, these are par for the course if you get involved in loving comics. So here, perhaps they don't belong in comics. Comics are male dominated. Comics are the last safe space for men. Women have novels. They don't need to take over comics as well. As a longtime reader, I want political agendas kept out of comics. I read comics to escape that crap. Let's see, another one. I don't think feminists should be writing comics. Female comic characters are meant to be sexualized to entice male readers. And I'm not certain women writers or artists know how to craft sexy female characters. So
I saw that tweet. I don't follow a ton of comic people on Twitter. I follow some, but obviously between you and a lot of my other friends, there are people who are in those circles, and these things, when something big happens, I tend to get a glimpse of it because it does kind of permeate my feed, and I pay attention because if it's blowing up like that, I want to know what's going on. I saw that specific comment, and like my brain just shut down. I didn't even know what to say to that. It's so awful and so backwards, and it makes me so angry that I was just like speechless.
It's very caveman too.
It is. It absolutely is. And here's the thing, is that having started Hero Hype, I knew that one thing I wanted to do was create a safe space for people to come in and discuss comics and comic book characters, whether they knew anything about them further than like the TV shows and the movies or not, and help people with getting into comics in a place that had no judgment and no kind of expectations, no gatekeeping, nothing. I just wanted some way to make a community for people to just explore what they may or may not like about comics and comic fandom without having to contend with stuff like this. Because when you start talking about comics at all, you do get a lot of people who think that, you know, this is theirs. Like, what a lot of these people don't understand is that women have been reading comics as long as men have. Probably the actual ratio of women to men reading comics has been a lot closer than anyone ever could have expected, except women tended not to go to comic book stores because of the attitudes that they would get going to comic book stores. So a lot of time they would buy stuff in secret or not publicize the fact that they were buying stuff. So the numbers are skewed, absolutely skewed. And, you know, I find that a lot of people when they come to me for recommendations are like, especially women, are like, I don't know about going to comic book stores. I don't know if I feel safe going to them. I don't know if they'll judge me or if they'll, like, judge my choice of comics. And it's terrible. It's awful. But so much of this is just brushed off as, like, oh, this is just comics. And it shouldn't be. It absolutely shouldn't be. And it's so frustrating because it's like, oh, no, comics doesn't have a sexism problem. It absolutely does. And I don't know. The other big thing is that there aren't really enough voices in the industry who are, like, running these comic companies that are, like, hardline saying, this is not okay, we don't stand for this. There should be more accountability there for people who don't stand up for it, because there are a lot of writers and artists who are employed by Marvel and DC, the two big two studios, who will in a sort of sub-tweety way, kind of agree with what's being said. And that shouldn't be allowed to slide. There are still writers and artists employed by DC, and I believe Marvel as well still, who have been documented as sexual harassers. And they have just been moved from department to department until it is no longer a problem. One in particular who works at DC and is overseeing the Superman mythos right now has been moved into an all-male environment so that he doesn't come into contact with women, so he can't cause a problem. So, you know, when this behavior is basically prevalent within the comic market itself, it's basically being justified that this sort of behavior is okay within the community, and it's not. And it's so frustrating that Mockingbird was cancelled, because titles like that are important because it diversifies the conversation. And it may not be everyone's thing, but it does open up that conversation, which is just as important. And yeah, the behavior just, it continues, it festers, and it just creates a community that isn't that welcoming. And it's so frustrating, because whenever I try to help people get into comics, I feel like I always have to have a caveat of like, but be aware that not everyone is going to welcome you.
What really, I mean, a lot of this just blows my mind, and I guess I should be more surprised by the sexism than I am, but I'm not. What really blows my mind is, from a business standpoint, why the hell would you not want women to be reading comics? There's a reason why, for example, the Twilight fandom totally took off, and Twilight was everywhere. Women are passionate, they like to spend money, and they invest emotionally in these characters. I'm not saying men don't do that, or some women, you know, don't do that either, but teenagers, especially teenage girls, like, this is what they like to do. This is how they pass their time. And the idea that people don't want women in comics strictly from a monetary point of view is insane to me. And I'm not a huge comic reader. Danya is probably the number one person that got me into comics. She's who I go to go read comics. And every time I like get behind, I feel like I fail you, Danya, but I know you love me anyway. I like comics, and I started getting very interested in particular with the Hellblazer comics because Constantine was airing, RIP Constantine, and I really fell in love with it. And I went to a comic book store, it may have even been the first comic book store I'd ever walked into, and I was like, hey, I can't find Hellblazer, I'm really interested in reading the first volume, can you help me? And the guy was like, actually, we're all sold out of that, you know, a lot of the girls come in now, and they buy them because they think that the guy who plays Constantine on the show, Matt Ryan, is really hot. And I was like, first of all, this was my first experience, like, I didn't really know what to say, and I was like, well, that's not why I'm reading it, like, that's not why I want to read it. I mean, I think Matt Ryan is really hot, but, like, there's so much more to that comic and that character than just aesthetics. But looking back on it now, that's a really typical situation for females when they go into comic book stores. And the idea that he's upset that people are buying comics, like, how? Like, how is that a thing? Who cares why they're buying it?
Exactly. That's exactly it. I don't care what has got you into comics. Your interest could have come from the movies. It could have come from, you know, oh, I like the look of Matt Ryan, I kind of enjoy the show, I want to know more about where that came from. That's fine. That's fine. It's a valid reason to go and pick up a comic and support the industry and figure out for yourself what you like and what you don't like. There is nothing wrong with that. It's the ridiculous gatekeeping of what is perceived to be comics, and it is still seen, or some subsets of the community still see it as a men's area, and it's like it's a safe haven for them, and it's always been theirs. And like, newsflash, no, it hasn't. It absolutely has not. Women may not have been as vocal about the fact that they were reading comics, but we've been there all along. I'm what, 28? I've been reading comics since I was about 5-6 years old. So personally, I've been reading comics for over 20 years. So, you know, we've been there. We are still here. And just because we are now expecting more from the comics that we love and have loved and will continue to love, even when it feels like they're failing us, you know, you can't shut us out of the conversation anymore, because we're finding ways to get in and have our voices heard in a way that they haven't really been able to before, because things like social media and easy access to creators and heads of, I guess, studios, you know, it wasn't as easy to get your opinion across and let people know how you feel about things immediately. And yeah, that can have, it can be a good thing and it can be a bad thing, but mostly it should be a good thing to open the conversation. But yeah, I'm just frustrated. This is not okay. It's never okay. Never okay. Any kind of online harassment and bullying is not fine. I don't care what you think about Mockingbird. And so many people I've seen in the comments have justified it. And I went on a little Twitter rant this morning about this whole thing, and I got a comment that said, "Playing the victim when your shitty comic fails isn't fooling anyone." That is a comment that I got this morning from talking about how terrible the community is and the way that women are treated within the community just when they try to have a conversation about things like harassment in the community. That was the first comment that I got on that Twitter thread this morning. When I
Thanks
was talking
for
about
proving
it.
My point.
Yeah, it proved itself right there.
I didn't want to retweet him or like quote tweet him and basically be like case in point, because I didn't want to give him a platform and a bigger voice. Mm-hmm. But I was basically like, this is exactly what I'm talking about. I don't care what you thought about Mockingbird itself, or the writing, or the comic, or anything like that. It is the way that you treat the writers and the team behind it, and attack them for expressing their creative view, which does connect with other people and does mean a lot to other people in the community. It may not be something that speaks to you. It may not be something that is basically highlighting your own voice and your own views, but it could be saving someone else or really speaking to someone else. So attacking a writer just because you don't like a cover or a comic is not okay. Never okay. Ever. And I just, it's so frustrating because I love comics, but I'm starting to get burnt out on the fact that nothing seems to be changing and nothing seems to be getting better, no matter how much I talk about it or how much I speak out, or anyone does for that matter. Because I feel like change from the outside is only so much. There needs to be some kind of stand taken from within the big two, Marvel and DC. And until that happens, until a bigger stand is taken, I don't see that anything's going to change.
I think that this is a very widespread problem. And I think that you're right, when you're in the middle of it, it really doesn't feel like it's moving. But I've got to believe that things are getting better, because without that hope, like, it just seems like a really dark place to be. And as somebody who really enjoys superheroes in comics and the movies and the television shows, the idea that that community is excluding me because I'm female, or that they think my opinions aren't as valid because I'm female, is, I mean, rage. Like, that's all I can think of. But I've got to believe that as women, you know, we can come together and make a change. And men who are feminists and who don't believe this bullshit that the other people believe, they can help as well. And I've got to believe that it's going to get better. But we've been raging for a while. Mitch, did you have anything to add to that topic?
Yeah, actually, I'm thinking of what Maisie Williams just said recently, if you guys are familiar. I can look up the exact quote, but I'll just paraphrase it. It was essentially that we need to stop calling people feminists. We need to call people who are sexists, but we shouldn't label the people that are progressive and for the good of humankind. And I was like, oh my God, yeah, because there's no reason to not call them out for their sexism. I think that that's it could be argued that that's, you know, more progressive to go ahead and call out people for their bullshit as opposed to saying anything else. It's just that, no, you're wrong and I'm in the norm here. You're the one that's, you know, degrading humanity by making everything about whatever you need to have a power over a woman. It's not okay.
I don't understand the stigma attached to feminist or feminism as a word, because the whole point is that it's about the equality of women to men.
Yeah,
that's it. It's like, bottom line, it's not about hating men, it's about being equal to them, and that's it, bottom line.
Right.
But it's skewed to the point where they think that a feminist is someone who hates men, and it's absolutely not. And just the whole thing doesn't make, like, here's the thing that bothers me the most, right? Superheroes, as a baseline, are social justice warriors. That is their whole point. They go out there and they fight for what is right and what they believe in, but justice for the disenfranchised and the beaten down, and that is basically their bottom line. They are social justice warriors. So, comics at their essence, or superhero comics at their essence, are exactly that. So, you know, maybe if you don't agree with social justice warriors, have a closer look at those figures that you're holding up on a pedestal and trying to protect with your gatekeeping, because newsflash, they're standing for everything that you seem to be against.
Gosh, that's what we call hashtag irony.
Yeah.
And
not the Alanis Morissette version.
Oh no, she's staying with this. Her irony version is not okay.
Oh god.
Nothing about it is true. Yeah. I'm sure, okay. I'm sure you guys get angry about that song all the time too, like I do. No, it's not ironic. God.
That was a very invigorating discussion. And I want to switch over to Mitch's gripe for this week, because I might fall on the other line of this, but I'm really excited to hear what you have to say about it, Mitch.
Yeah, not a lot of other people, I'm going to say, feel as passionate as I do for the Nintendo Switch, because I am, like, bred and born a Super Nintendo fan, and I'm not just saying the console. I love this company, and I think they've made some big mistakes with the Switch already, which is really sad to see, because they made some even bigger mistakes with the Wii U. They're not exactly fixing all that they had gone that went wrong with the Wii U. Basically, the Nintendo Switch, if you're not familiar, it's really hard to describe it. That's part of my gripe. It's a home console and a handheld console. It's a hybrid, meaning you will be able to play it on your TV, or you will be able to play it on a little tiny screen, much like the Wii U's gamepad. The issue that I have with this is that this whole user interface is so confusing already. It has, like, four parts to one controller, because you can plug in these two little joysticks, I'm going to call them, to the side of the console to charge it. Or you can attach them to a screen to play it portably. And then this dock also that you're charging with also connects to the TV. It just gets really confusing really quickly. And there are also like talks of different kinds of controllers, which I get. Pro players want to play fighting games, so they have to make a new controller for that. It gets really muddled and really confusing. And coming into it, I had to watch the video. No one else really agrees with me here, so that's why this is my gripe. Because I'm like, why are more people not as confused and as angry at this as I am? Because this console doesn't make sense. It's also going back to cartridges, much like, yeah, the Nintendo 64, I suppose, but they're smaller ones, like the DS would take. But still, that is an older technology. That's one that doesn't exactly make sense to me. And they're doing it so that you can hold the console portably and not have to damage a disc when you're moving around so much. I get it. I really do get it. But I think that they shouldn't have gone with this concept for the console then. It's not only confusing to also have console slash handheld, but also to have to worry about, like, the battery life of it being portable. It's just, it's going to be too much for me to want to get into. I'm going to probably just play it at home, like it would be a normal console, keep my two little joystick controllers plugged in nicely so that maybe I don't have to charge them. I don't know, it's all wireless. And I don't want to have to worry. That's the thing. There's so much worry that I have with this console. I'm worrying about what it's going to have as a processing power because it's using these old cartridges. And I'm worrying about what it's going to be for, obviously, the battery lives for not only the screen that you're attaching the controllers to, but the controllers themselves. I'm worrying about losing something, much like the Apple... Are they called AirPods or are they not called AirPods? Whatever they are. Those things are going to get lost, as will my Nintendo AirPods. Switch controller pieces. I'm really frustrated about this. I wish that this console was console controller done. I really don't want it to separate. It's okay if you want to make it portable even. That's even okay. I think you could have found a way around making it so this controller falls apart and it just... Why? I'm really going to lose it. That's probably my biggest gripe, that I'm going to lose a part to this console and I'm going to be really sad about it. Did you guys get into the Nintendo Switch reveal video when it first came out?
Oh, yeah.
Not really.
Oh, really? See, this is one of the reasons why I was really excited that the three of us were on this week, and also because of my hype, I feel like is sort of appropriate, because you two are pretty big gamers, and I'm not, but I know that, like, I go to you guys when I have questions about that sort of thing, and so I kind of view you guys as, you know, the experts on these certain things, and I was really curious, Danya, what you thought about this, but did you watch the video, or were you just kind of uninterested?
I did watch it. I was really underwhelmed by it, to be honest. I feel like Nintendo are very good at cashing in on the nostalgia factor. They're so good at invoking feelings of nostalgia in people, of like what you felt like as a kid playing some of their games and how you grew up with that stuff. And they're so good in their marketing at getting you to feel that again and want to spend money on their stuff. And a lot of the time, it just doesn't live up to it. And for me, the Switch is part of that. Like, it's trying to capture essences of Nintendo, the company, and Nintendo consoles from years gone by, from when I was a kid growing up playing their consoles and games. And it's kind of an amalgamation of stuff like the Nintendo 64, and then the Game Boy, and then with all of these cartridges. And I'm like, I understand what they're getting at with it. It's supposed to feel familiar but new. It just doesn't work for me. Mm-mm. At all. I think I'm getting hip to the way that, like, people are marketing stuff a lot of the time and how they're advertising stuff, and it's just not working on me anymore.
I wish it would. Me too. I'm with you, Don. You're like, yeah, that sums up also how I feel, that their nostalgia factor is out of control to the point where they rely almost solely on it sometimes, especially with the Mario franchise. And I get it that he is a very popular character. I really do. I wish they would concentrate more on new IPs, or even ones that are great that they ignore, like the new IP of Splatoon. I hope they continue on with that. They seem like they will. That was,
I liked
that was,
Splatoon.
It was. You do like it?
I did, yeah. I thought Splatoon was pretty fun. It was a neat little game, and it was quite it was quite fun, and it was really colorful, and I just really like that.
Splatoon is like a paint turf war game. You have like a little paint gun, and you're trying to squirt as much paint as
almost
you can.
Almost like capture the flag.
Yeah, it is. It is, and you can still kill your enemies, I guess, with just squirting them with so much paint that they explode. But it's not violent, so it's like it's like the comfier, cozier Call of Duty. But you still get camped, and you still get teabags, so don't expect that to go away.
Wow,
it's so true. No, it is such a really nice new IP that they came up with. And look, I'll put my hands up. I'm a huge fan of the Zelda franchise. I'm a huge fan of the Mario franchise. I'm a huge fan of so many different Nintendo franchises. Pokemon, you know, I grew up with all of those, playing them. But I think it's the same thing, like, the Final Fantasy franchise has stopped meaning as much to me as well. Whereas when I was a lot younger, it meant so much more to me. And yeah. I tend to play Final Fantasy IX and earlier a lot still. Like, I have a lot of replay value in that. I don't get tired of those games. Whereas,
it's hard to. There's so much content. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas 10 and later, I just don't care. I didn't feel that emotional attachment anymore, even though I bought so many of them because it still had that name attached to it. So I was still like, this is still something I want. So for me, it just being a Nintendo console and it being Nintendo and knowing that new games of franchises that I loved as a kid are going to be coming to it, you know, it's just not enough anymore to sell me on things, and the nostalgia factor just isn't enough anymore. So
I'll tell you this much. I won't be buying it day one, and this isn't like the most hardcore gripe I could have, because it's definitely not like I hate Nintendo. It's really not. It's that I love it so much and I want it to be better, and I see how it can improve and how it's making mistakes. So, and that's part of what we're doing with gripes. I think sometimes that the way Natalie introduced it to me, at least, was she was like, sometimes you're going to have things that you don't like, but only because you love it so much and you want it to be better. That's this with the Nintendo Switch for me.
Yeah. Usually you criticize something because you love it and you expect it to do better and you want it to do better. It's like me with the comics community and you with Nintendo and just so many things.
And that's like the thing. It's tough because it's like I don't know how to criticize it to make it better, because I think that Nintendo is in this weird spiral that it started after the Wii, because it was like, we like kind of strange innovation, motion control, touch screens, 3D screens, wow, you have a tablet you can play on. And it's like, no, calm down. The Wii was a thing, we get it, it caught fire, that was fine. You don't have to make everything so blazing and strange. You can make a normal console. The Nintendo 64, while it may now kind of aged poorly, I suppose, because it's an old technology, I think it still was really innovative just from being a console with great games and a really neat controller, but it did games first. It didn't do innovation first. This console really needs to concentrate on the games. Maybe a good Metroid title would help out, and I'm a little bit gripey, too, about the fact that the Legend of Zelda game was delayed so many times that it's just going to be dual-released, just like Twilight Princess was for GameCube and Wii. They're doing the same thing with Breath of the Wild for the Wii U and the NX. Not the NX, gosh. The Nintendo Switch. So that means we probably may not get Nintendo Switch Zelda now, and I'm like, ah, God, Nintendo needs to, I think, just kind of anchor down and be like, great, we have these core gamers that love Metroid, that love Zelda, that even love Mario 3D platformers. Let's get on those first, and then let's save these innovative, strange consoles for later. I hope this console sells well. I hope Nintendo doesn't go any more under, because the Wii U really did a number on it. I'll give you that much.
Have you priced the Switch yet?
No, actually. See, my speculation is, I'm going to say $350 and above. I just feel like that's the way Nintendo would sell it, even though it probably should cost more in terms of inflation. That's the thing with a lot of video game consoles. You wouldn't expect them to cost what they should, because we've been buying consoles for the past, you know, arguably 20 years, and they've cost around a similar price point. They should have gone up a little bit more, in my opinion.
Don't they lowball the consoles so that people buy them and then make their money on the games?
more of DLC much, these days, because the games have stayed at a pretty similar price point, too, of $50 to $60 for console games, but DLC is getting out of control. That's probably where the whole gaming industry needs a good old gripe.
I don't know what DLC means.
Oh, downloadable content.
Gotcha.
Extra bits you can do that should have been included in the game usually, but they decided to hold it out. Like in-app purchases on mobile.
I know some things.
Like, sometimes it's justified. Don't get me wrong. I like it when a game is, it kind of gains more popularity than they expected. And they're like, great, we can move on with this without making a new game. We'll just add in more content. But then when they start to get to the point where they're like, day one DLC, you can buy this $12 map for your Call of Duty game. And I'm like, you should have brought that into the game already. That shouldn't have been a purchase thing. But they know people will purchase it, so that's why it's what it is. So yeah, Karen, I'd say that's where really you're being gouged.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mitch, here's a potentially controversial Nintendo opinion.
Okay.
Okay. The last console that I really loved by Nintendo was the GameCube.
Not controversial at all.
You don't think so?
I nearly agree with you. Mario Sunshine is life. It really is.
Yeah, so many people like rag on the GameCube, but I loved the GameCube so much.
Well, that was the first console I ever had, guys.
The GameCube and the Wii U are considered to be financial failures for Nintendo, believe it or not. Especially the GameCube. That one kind of shocks me, but still, it was. Comparatively to the Xbox and the PlayStation 2, it did not do nearly as well at all. It's sad, because it is, once again, a great console to the same effect of the N64. It just advanced the technology, and it had great games, and it had great Nintendo IPs for it. So that's where they need to go back. That's why we love the GameCube.
Guess what color GameCube I owned?
Did you have that really awesome orange one?
No, I did not.
So just the classic purple?
I had the purple one, yeah.
Yeah, the purple one is just so... Yeah, their color schemes were great. Yeah, I want Nintendo to go back to those very, like, keep it simple, stupid days. Those were amazing. God, that GameCube lunchbox looks so cool.
Live by the Pixar philosophy of keep it simple, stupid. Like,
yeah, and excel.
I just want to say, as somebody who is not a huge gamer but likes to play video games, I actually am kind of excited about the Nintendo Switch. Not that I'm going to buy it, to be perfectly honest, because I don't have that kind of money. But the concept of being able to switch between a home system and a portable system is interesting to me. It doesn't hurt that they used a Great Dane in their video. Just throwing that out there. You guys were talking about marketing earlier. They were marketing to me.
Oh, the
so
dog
like,
that's ignored?
Yeah.
The guy goes out to walk his dog and he ignores the dog as he plays his console instead.
Yeah.
Let's put that poor dog.
That was for me, personally. I love Great Danes. I think I'm more interested probably in technological advances than I am in the actual technology. I like the idea that they're trying something new and different and moving forward, and it makes me excited about what's going to come down the line. But I do see some of the issues, especially with the controllers. People are talking about how they're so small and how they're going to get lost and things like that. I think that is going to be an issue, but this makes me excited about what's to come. So,
listen, if that new Nintendo Switch video was showing off real games, not just faking us out, I'd be even more excited. But I think it's faking us out, because I think they need to actually announce the titles, because they've done that before many times with really awesome looking games. Like that new Mario Kart was definitely just a Mario Kart 8 with some new skins, and then that Mario platformer, the 3D platformer, I was like, oh god, please just tell me like they're gonna add in Flood to make this Mario Sunshine too. But I'm keeping my hopes really low. I'm not expecting any really awesome launch title. I'm expecting them to say basically that, oh, you get the Breath of the Wild from Legend of Zelda, that's good enough. And I'm gonna be like, no, that was what I've been waiting for. That's why I bought my Wii U, and I've been waiting for that game this whole time. You can't pull that on me, Nintendo. They need to come out of the gates with a really good just Mario Sunshine 2. That's it. That's all I need.
So my benchmark for buying a next-gen console was always, like, when is The Last Guardian coming out? I will buy a next-gen console when that game comes out. Never. I'm still waiting, guys.
Never.
It's apparently supposed to be coming out in December. I won't believe it until I physically have that game in my hands, and it's, like, right there, and I can play it. Yeah. And it's a real thing. But the fact of the matter is that at this point, I can no longer afford a next generation console.
You can when they're last gen. How's that sound?
Yeah. I don't know. I've got a friend who owns, like, loads of next gen consoles, so I'll just buy the game and go around their house and be like, hey, what's up? I'm just gonna park my ass right here and play this game, and you just do your thing, like, whatever.
And Danya, this is like the only platform that I have to talk to you with this about. I wanted to mention that there's something really awesome happening with the Kingdom Hearts series, that you can play
what?
All of the six main series entries on one game, on one console, on the PlayStation 4. They just announced today they're doing a mega collection of it. I know. Isn't that exciting? Not related to a Nintendo Switch combo, but definitely game and Donya related.
Oh my god!
Yeah, it's cool. It's fun. But this is just kind of feeling like... I wish Jack was on today, Karen, and Donya, because he would have been like really into this Nintendo Switch combo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Jack. We'll have Jack on soon.
Yeah. We'll talk about it when it comes out. We'll make sure that it's like...
Yes.
We'll come back into it.
Yeah. Okay, I want to switch over to my gripe really quick, which I don't think is as intense as your guys's this week, which is totally fine. But it kind of goes back to what I was saying about being really interested in technology and how that progresses and that sort of thing. My gripe this week is people's hatred of dystopian novels and dystopian movies and stories and that sort of thing. The reason why this came up is because, shameless plug, on Book Hype, we were trying to pick a theme for one of our weeks, and the week happens to fall on the presidential election, on voting day. And so we're saying, okay, something about politics, something about government. And I was like, well, there's a lot of really good dystopian novels about the government going to shit and everything going wrong. But it's hard to bring that up now because I think people are kind of over the dystopian era. And I don't blame them, because with The Hunger Games and with Divergent and all of these other things that have come out, it's not like this genre has only existed recently, but that it's really blown up recently. And I think people are very much moving past that. Whereas I still love those stories. I love the idea of the world being complete crap and somebody having to fight for what they believe is right and everything is against them and overcoming that. Those are the types of stories that get me really invested in characters and really excited. But I just wanted to throw it to you guys if you guys are totally over dystopian novels or if you're still into them.
I am over them, but in a way that's not like I hate them. It's more of like I hate what they do to my psyche. Because, for instance, I cannot read the final Hunger Games book ever again. Because it is so viscerally upsetting to me, everything that happens in it. And it's like the Children of War. Oh god, it rips you apart. It really does. And that's similarly, I won't get into Divergent. Because I'm just like, I can't, I've already done this in The Hunger Games. I can't get attached to Triss and then just watch as, like, every family member dies or goes crazy. And I can't do it. It's so depressing. I already had that in The Walking Dead. Like, that's way too much for me already to be able to handle. So if I'm trying to get into that with, like, reading more books about dystopia, it's even worse. Because I'm imagining it all. So I don't need it to be in my mind. I'm okay if I can just shut it off of the screen and I'm done. But, like, books can be really intense, dystopian books. 1984, that book still haunts me to this day. It really will. Handmaid's Tale, that one is just horrific. They're really tough material to get through. Every single dystopian book that I've read has never been like, la-di-da, don't you enjoy reading this? It's like, everyone dies and they loved it.
You're not wrong. Danya, what about you?
Well, I will just throw out that I absolutely love The Handmaid's Tale. So, we're just throwing that one out there. I think it's great. But, I think I'm over it. For a slightly different reason again, and I think it's because at the moment, particularly in this last year, it's a bit like life imitating art, almost, and the things are getting a little bit too close to the scenarios that have been occurring in many dystopian novels that have come out over the last few years. And we're moving closer and closer to a lot of that. And it's getting really uncomfortable, particularly, you know, the climate over here since Brexit, and the climate in America around the election. Like, it's really uncomfortable to then go and watch dystopian stuff, because it's not really an escape anymore. It's not a what if. It feels more like a oh when. So I'm finding it really hard to like get into dystopian stuff just because of that. So I've been moving further and further away from it and picking up books that are slightly more hopeful, just like all around, and a little more optimistic and upbeat, just because at the moment life is basically a dystopian novel. So
it's pretty terrifying. Like, even back to the Hunger Games, you can see like how reality TV and society's obsession with violence could lead to such a horrific thing as the actual Hunger Games. It's weird. It's like, wait, how can like humanity get that dark? How can we get to the level where we lose the ability to understand what should and shouldn't happen just on a basic human level?
I mean, to a lesser extent, you've got, I don't know, do you guys have a show called like I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, or is that particularly a British
thing? That sounds like a British show to me.
I've heard of it though.
Basically, they take a load of B-list and Z-list like celebrities and C-list celebs, like, you know, celebrities that are classed as like has-beens, and they basically throw them into the jungle and make them make them survive. Essentially, they have to go around and complete like tasks, and it's actually kind of traumatizing. I don't understand the joy that people get out of watching them having to struggle through surviving and then having to complete what are known as bush tucker trials, where they have to complete like really horrible like tasks and challenges to win food. So it's kind of there in some of the entertainment that we consume as a society. It just in a slightly less extreme way.
It kind of reminds me of the Amazing Race, because sometimes they have like celebrities. Like, I remember watching one set of it. Sorry, my cat is like biting my hand as I'm talking. You know, as you do. Like, they had one set of it that I remember, there were like YouTube stars, and it was like Zach King and Tyler Oakley. And I was like, wow, this starts to feel really scary when you feel like you know the people and they're climbing up Mount Everest.
Yeah.
That they did do a whole like YouTube social media kind of thing with The Amazing Race, and they had all of them on there.
But so, it's not like I hate dystopia, I Karen. Back to your point, I really don't, yeah. I don't hate dystopia. I'm just scared of it.
Yeah, that makes sense. It gets really real sometimes. And I think that's why I enjoy it, because I like to see the parallels between what's going on now and what's going on in the stories. And, like, objectively, without actually meaning what I'm saying, the idea of living in a dystopian world is very intriguing to me, which is, like, kind of messed up. Karen. I'm not gonna lie. Like, I know. I know that makes me sound
like, do you
want to
live in a Mortal Kombat dystopia? Is that what you're thinking?
I mean, you know what? Maybe, Mitch. Maybe I would.
Finish
and you
her.
Can't stop me. but yeah, I just think that's really interesting. Let's move on, though, because talking about obsessions to share, and speaking of YouTube, Mitch, this kind of segues into your hype this week.
Totally. I love the concept of advanced cord cutting, aka sticking it to the man, and mostly via YouTube. I love being able to access free content, and I hope that stays like that for a very long time. I love me some Pentatonix, some Superfruit. And I love me some Miranda Sings and then some Psycho Soprano. Whenever I can find like a duo that matches up with like main channel and then side vlogs, I get really happy. And because it makes you feel like you're really getting to know someone as a friend, and it gives you some like strange semblance of social interaction. And it's free. I mean, you do have to watch ads unless you're ad blocking. But even for my favorite YouTubers, I make sure that I'm like watching on the app or something so that I can give them all of the money that I can without actually paying anything. It's really fun. And also, if you're looking to play a game, this is like, it feels like a cheap workaround and something like I shouldn't do. But when I want to play a game and I don't want to buy it and I've waited years and I'm like, I'm just not going to play it. I don't have time. I'm just going to watch someone play it. I'm going to watch someone with their commentary. They're going to be funny and it's going to be in really high quality. They're going to have subtitles and I'm going to love it. And I can pause it whenever I want, come right back. I can watch it on the bus, whatever. It's really fun to just browse around on YouTube and find like 3-hour videos of like a speed run of your favorite game or just anything. Like, you can find people talking like us on there, just general talk about your favorite TV show. It's amazing. YouTube especially, but of course, like, podcasts and Twitch or Rip Vine, but a lot of that entertainment is just, I hope, still going to remain free for a very long time. If it started to become to the point where YouTube Red caught on, I would be a bit more sad, because YouTube Red's that paid service where you don't have mm-hmm. ads, I believe, and you can only, there might be something about only accessing certain videos from vloggers if you have YouTube Red. I know there are like movies and stuff on there, and I guess this also could kind of tie into Netflix. Netflix, of course, is what it is. There's a reason Netflix and chill is such a thing. It's amazing to just be able to just turn on a show and not have it bother you until you've watched four and ask you if you're still watching, because you always are. It's great. There's a lot of quality content out there. If I had to suggest one show on Netflix to watch, I'd probably say Jessica Jones. I think that one is one of the highest quality Marvel shows out there, and I've watched myself some Marvel shows in my day, and I love that one, and I think it could be fun and mind-opening, and eye-opening as well, and you could really enjoy it on a lot of different levels once you get into it. So cut those cords, enjoy the world in this millennial age, and enjoy YouTube, Netflix, etc.
So I don't know if you guys have it as much over there, but we have over here something called Freeview, so you can get like a little box, or sometimes it comes programmed into your TV where you get a certain number of channels for free, and it can sometimes be up to 100. So I have about 100 channels for free, and most of them cover channels that I would want to watch anyway. So I don't really pay anything for traditional TV anyway. And then the only other thing that I have is Netflix, or the way that it works out is that I have Netflix and my mom and dad use my login, and they have Amazon Prime and I use their login for Amazon Prime.
Good switch.
So it works out because I pay for Netflix and they pay for Amazon Prime. So those are the only things that I have, and it pretty much covers everything that I would want. Well, really.
Thanks. You know what's funny though? Like, half the time when I'm sitting down to enjoy my night, I'm like, do I want to get into a Netflix show right now? And I'm like, no, not really. I kind of just want to watch stupid stuff on YouTube. And I usually end up finding the stuff on YouTube not so stupid. It's usually more enlightening and thought-provoking than I would find in a TV show. Because it's quicker, it's in, it's out. And you can really just pick and choose the topic you want to get into that day. It's really fun just to, I know this sounds like such a general thing, but I've just found myself recently wanting to just relax to some free entertainment, and I'm almost happier knowing that it's free. I'm like, okay, I'd rather pay my, you know, attention and advertisements than pay for a service at this point. That seems like, I hope, the way that the entertainment market goes, that they want a reasonable amount of viewership for advertisements before accessing content, as opposed to paying so much or anything at all for content at all.
Yeah, this idea that we're getting all of these different subscription services now. You've got Hulu, you've got Amazon, you've got Netflix, you've got CBS All Access, and, you know, all of these things. It's getting really overwhelming because I already pay for cable, and now you want me to pay for all of these other things on top of that. One of them has to go, and I think it might be cable, but cable is also tradition. You know, there's a lot of people still who just keep with the basic cable package, and I am getting frustrated that so many of the things I watch are on the other platforms, but at the same time, a lot of emphasis is still put on cable. And I love Netflix. I would not get rid of that for anything. I think that they put out a lot of really awesome shows, but with all of these other things popping up, I noticed that, like, okay, you can use my Netflix account, I'll use your Hulu account and stuff like that, which, you know, may or may not be entirely legal, but it's what a lot of people do. And I love the idea of this, like you were saying, cord cutting almost, or the idea that you can watch what you want, when you want, and it doesn't, you don't have to go from week to week trying to follow a TV show. As somebody who's like a month behind on all of the new fall TV shows that came out and the ones that I've been watching for years, it's really frustrating because I know that every week there's something new and that I have to be there for that time. And like, I DVR things, so it makes it a little bit easier, but when Netflix comes out with a new series and there are 10 episodes, like, I find myself watching that almost right away. And it's just this different kind of idea behind it, I think, this mentality when you go to Netflix versus watching something on cable. But back to YouTube, too. I love YouTube. I'm a huge fan of the Vlogbrothers, John yes. and Nick Green. Friggin' love them so much, and the way that they've changed YouTube themselves and the way that they've changed the way they use YouTube is incredible to me. I like that idea almost as much as I like the content that they put out, because they do a lot of educational stuff and their crash course videos are used in classrooms. I mean, they're used in classrooms. So this is so legit. And you think of YouTube as, you know, the fail videos or cat videos, and like, there's nothing wrong with cat videos, let me tell you that. I watch a lot of cat videos, but there's so much more out on YouTube, and the fact that it can be used as an educational platform is astounding to me. That's what I do on my lunch breaks. I'll pull up SciShow, I'll pull up SciShow Space, and just watch things that educate me. And like you were saying, Mitch, 4 minutes, you've watched a whole video, you've learned something new. And it's so much more, I think, entertaining sometimes and educational than sitting down to watch a television show that you know you have to block out an hour for. So it's give and take, I think. Traditional television is going to be around for a lot longer, but this moving forward of technology, again, I find really interesting.
I love Crash Course, by the way. So
I need
much.
To actually, like, watch it. I haven't watched any of them yet, believe it or not, but I know how good they are.
I really enjoyed the U.S. history one, actually. I sat down and watched, what was it, 47 episodes, give or take, of the U.S. history one, and that was John.
That was John. Pre or post Hamilton?
Pre, actually.
Oh, very.
I started watching it around the time it launched, because I think it was the first one that they did. I like history, but it's really odd. We learned a lot about, like, the Great Plains and the trek across the Great Plains in history classes over here, because a lot of it was from people who had settled from Britain, and it also had an effect coming back on, like, trade agreements and stuff like that. So it was really important for us to learn about. So we learned, like, a fair amount of U.S. history just from a different perspective. So it was really interesting to go in and watch all of that. So, yeah. It was really cool. I actually really enjoy it. I watch the Crash Course games, even though most of it is stuff that I know, I just watch it anyway. What else did I watch? I've watched so many of them. They're really good, though.
Yeah. I'll have to sit down and watch some. I want to jump into yours now, Danya, your hype for this week, because I have a feeling that I'm just going to sit back and listen, and I am going to be very excited, even though I don't necessarily watch the show. So please, take it away.
You've seen a grand total of 2 episodes, right?
I have, yes, and I cried both times. Why? Mm-hmm. Why? I don't understand. It makes no sense to me, but I became very emotionally invested very quickly.
Yeah. So my hype for this week is The Great British Bake Off. The finale aired Wednesday. We're recording this on a Thursday, so I'm still kind of high on the the bake-off kind of... it's just so good. It's reality TV, but in a way that is just so, so nice. Like, none of the contestants are out to get each other. They'll help each other. They'll encourage each other all the way through. It's just so different, and it's everything about Britain and British culture that I wish we would embrace more. But post-Brexit, it's been so horrific over here that something like the Great British Bake Off is everything that I wish we could go back to, because it's just such a nice ideal. But for anyone who doesn't watch it, it's essentially a baking competition where they go through challenges every week, the signature challenge, where they have to use, they're given like a task of something to bake, and then they have to use like their signature ingredients or put their own spin on it or something like that. They've got the technical challenge, which comes in the middle, which they are given a bare bones recipe for something and they have to fill it all in with their own baking knowledge. And then they've got the showstopper challenge, which is the last one where they basically are given a bake to do and they have to make it the most spectacular, amazing thing that they could do. And it just, it pushes them. There's some amazing bakes that come out of it, and you learn a lot about like baking history and where things came from and the tradition behind certain things. And Mary Berry is a dream, who is one of the judges, and she's like the sweetest person, and she's been a sort of staple on British TV in terms of like cooking and baking for years, and she's basically a British institution. She's as dear to people as the Queen probably is. I mean, her nickname is Queen Bazza, so... and then you've got the hosts, Mel and Sue, who are basically there to drop a load of baking puns and support the bakers and sneakily eat things when they think no one's looking. They are the best. But this season is so bittersweet for me because it's the last one that will be on the BBC. And the Bake Off has always been, for me, a show that's so quintessentially the BBC. Like, it's everything about that channel that I love in this one show. And Love Productions, who technically owns the show and produces it, the contract ran out on it with the BBC this year, and they sold it to Channel 4, which is which runs advertising and does product placement and is a for-profit channel. So it it's continuing after this year, but it's going to change quite a lot, especially without Mary Berry, without Mel and Sue. The only person moving on is Paul Hollywood, one of the other judges, who's basically dead to me. So that's why I didn't mention him, because I hate him and his smug face right now. So, yeah, it's just not going to be the same, because the recipe of this show that made it such a success was in the hosts and the judges and the format. And Mel and Sue have come out and spoken about how to stop like Love Productions from basically capitalizing on when things went wrong and when bakers were like crying. They would go over and they would literally swear over shots so that they couldn't be used and they'd interrupt shots and so that they couldn't just capitalize on the distress of some of the bakers to like make drama and sensationalize it when it wasn't that kind of show. And you just know that now that it's moving over to Channel 4, that's absolutely what they're going to do. So yeah, I won't, because it's only just finished, and I know that people in the US and who are listening to this watch it and may not have had a chance to watch the final episode yet, I won't spoil who wins. But I will say that after last season, where I didn't think anything would get better than Nadia and Tamal in last season's Bake Off, and nothing would really top that. I will say that I really thoroughly enjoyed this year, and there were a lot of bakers in it this year that I loved so much, and I'm very happy with the person that won. And it was just, it was nice, but the whole way through it was kind of this bittersweet feeling of knowing that this was the last time it was going to feel like this, because it's moving to Channel 4. And in my head, I'm basically like, oh, such a shame that this was the last season ever. It's been cancelled. Oh, no. But there was news recently that Nadia has been approached by the BBC for like a long-term contract of like working on shows in conjunction with them. And Mary Berry and Mel and Sue have both, like, all three of them have been like, yeah, we're pretty much loyal to the BBC. And then Paul Hollywood lived up to his name and went where the money was. So, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if the BBC developed something with Nadia and Mary Berry at the head of it, with Mel and Sue involved somewhere else, and made a contender to the Great British Bake Off, Channel 4's version of Great British Bake Off, and made something new. Cool. I'd love to see Nadia working on a show on the BBC. But yeah, it was so good, and I love this show so much. And I mean, you'll attest to this, Karen. We were in New York the two times that you watched episodes with me. Mm-hmm. They've been the final of the Bake Off, and the reason that it didn't happen this year, and I would have dragged you if it had been the final of Bake Off to come and sit down and watch it with me, the reason it didn't happen this year is because the Bake Off started later this year because of Olympics coverage. So it was pushed to a later date. So the final aired this week. So, yeah. But Karen has watched two finals. Last year's final and the year before. And you'll attest to the fact that I was basically like, no, we need to be in the hotel room and we need to be sitting down in front of my computer and we need to find a way to watch this while it is airing.
I mean, I honestly like laughed at first because it's a baking show. Like, what's the big deal? But people are crazy for the show, and I'm actually disappointed that Natalie isn't here because she loves the show. Leo would be fun. I saw them tweeting about it earlier, and it just it made me excited. But I think what you were saying earlier about the attitudes on the show and everything, like, it's so different from American reality television. Completely different. Everybody on The Great British Bake Off is nice, and they support each other. And I'm sure everybody has their moments. I mean, I haven't watched every single episode or anything, but the entire tone of the series is so different from anything, I think, American, because our reality television shows tend to be very combative and competitive. And that's why I don't really watch reality television, because it stresses me out. Like, I don't like it when people argue. And this one is just, people are really excited about the craft, the opportunity, and the idea that, you know, they're all sort of in this together in a way. And I think that's a really lovely sentiment.
Yeah, I really love it as well. I mean, we've got a lot of reality shows that are the same. They're really horrible, and people are pitted against each other, and there's a lot of false and overwrought drama put on it. And yeah, Bake Off was this beautiful show in a sea of horrible, horrific reality TV, and I'm desperately going to miss it, and really do hope that the BBC do something to replace it.
Yeah. Reruns. You can always watch reruns.
True. Very true.
Okay, I have a question for you guys, unrelated to this, and related to my hype for this week. Two questions, actually. One, have either of you played Assassin's Creed before?
Yes, but not a lot.
Okay, and two, did you guys see the Assassin's Creed movie trailer?
Yes.
I've seen one of them. Is there more than one now that I should watch?
Yes, there's two now.
There's a second one.
Okay.
So, I have never played Assassin's Creed. I told you guys I'm not really, like, a huge gamer. I was aware of the franchise. It's pretty popular. And I also see a lot of cosplays when I go to Comic-Con for Assassin's Creed. So, like, I'm aware of the premise and everything. Michael Fassbender is going to be playing the lead character in the movie, which got me excited because I really, really like his portrayal in X-Men. And he's just a great actor all around, but really sold me on Eric. I think he does a fantastic job with that role. And I was like, okay, I also like action movies, so this seems like something I'm interested in. And I watched the trailer and really enjoyed it. Watched the second one and got even more pumped for it. And I'm kind of just here for the action part of it because I think the fighting and the choreography and the parkour looks amazing. And that's what's got me really pumped. But as people who have played the game, what do you guys think of the trailer?
Well, I think I should start off by saying, before I know Danya's positive review, that I have not... This is like a minor gripe, because I want to hear why you love it, Danya, because I think you do, if I remember correctly. The reason I didn't like the game, essentially, was because... And if anyone doesn't know the concept, you're essentially going back in time into your past lives of your generations, and you're fighting in like a Matrix kind of style of your mind to assassinate people. In a way. The reason I didn't like it is because the game started to feel too, like, hunt questy. Like, all you would do is just kind of... It's kind of like those Spider-Man movie tie-in games where you just... You like, web-sling to one area of town, you beat up the baddie, and you web-sling to the next area of town, return the goods you stole from him. And the movie does seem to amp up the action and take some of those cool, like, jumping off of a giant clock tower into a hay bale effects, which I like. Those do look pretty cool. And the parkour does look awesome. Parkour was a lot of the reason that I wanted to love Assassin's Creed. And playing the first, I just didn't love it. But Danya, I did like this the one that took place during the American Revolution. I've watched friends play that one. Do you have like a favorite in the game series that seems to be relating more to this movie? Is it based off of just the first game, do you think?
It's not based off any of the games.
Okay.
The movie is completely separate, so it's taking a new character sort of and putting them in the same kind of time frame as like some of the Assassin's Creed games, but it's not linked specifically, and it's not taking one of the characters from the games and putting it into movie form. So it's kind of, it's an adaptation of the games, but loosely. So
I thought the character was from the games.
No, because the problem then would be that the character would be whitewashed. The character is all of the characters that go back and are kind of moving around in time are either like Spanish and like not white Spanish. And then there's some Asian ones, and then there's, like, all sorts. So, no, this character is very much super white. And
there was a cool pirate one. I don't know what race he was. But that was I went to a really cool Comic-Con party on a pirate ship for it. I remember that. That was cool.
He was Welsh. He was based Edward Kenway. Is an actual, based off an actual real pirate, like, real thing.
So what's the name of the guy in the movie? I forget which one is Ezio. I really wish I could remember the game series some more.
He was the first Assassin's Creed.
So this guy is not Ezio. His name isn't Ezio, right?
No.
They didn't even go that far?
No, I'm pretty sure it's not.
I don't know his name in this
movie. I think his name is Aguilar.
Hmm. Yeah, so it's like...
So is this like an alt-uni of Assassin's Creed, or is this going to be like another iteration of the Assassin's Creed series, you know?
It's going to be almost like, I think, another iteration.
Okay, I'll get behind that.
Yeah, which is why I'm kind of on the fence about it, mostly, because there's something about Assassin's Creed that's really immersive when you're, like, playing it and you're involved and you're going back and forth. I'm not sure how it's going to really work as a movie, because it's such a complex thing to get your head around as a movie,
Prince
but
of
as
Persia
a game...
Already.
Don't mention
I didn't hear what you said, actually.
I said I'm spelling Prince of Persia with this movie.
Please, no. Prince of Persia was so bad. That movie was an abomination.
I want to watch it just to see how bad it was. The games are really... I think that these are similar genres and everything. Sci-fi mixed in with history and all that. Prince of Persia games, you're right. They're probably nothing like that movie, because if you're saying they were bad, I loved the one... I played this one demo that... do you remember PlayStation Magazine used to have, like, demos of, like... Yeah, and they had one of them was Prince of Persia, and I played through the demo like 500 times. And I was so amazed by, like, stopping time and everything. But I take it the movie didn't do a good job of adapting that video game.
Oh, God, no. No, and also all of the Persians ended up being white. Imagine that.
Oh, yeah, like Jake Gyllenhaal, for instance.
Yeah, as the titular Prince of Persia. Like, come on. Come on. But, I don't know, it looks... The Assassin's Creed trailer looks... fine, it looks good. I don't always feel great about video game to movie adaptations, because most of them just don't work. So
that is accurate.
I'm
I can't think of one that does work, judgment. Karen.
Tomb Raider. What? Tomb Raider is one of the few ones that I think Tomb Raider. That works.
Karen, I'm picking on you for Mortal Kombat again if you didn't pick it up.
That's fine. I also like Super Mario Brothers, so...
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God! Yep, I own the DVD, and I'm proud of it. I watch it all the time.
Yeah, the Tomb Raider ones are said to be horrible, too. I never watched them on purpose because I love the games so much, and I don't want to have it ruined for me.
I love the games,
The Tomb Raider movies are really great.
They have, like, a horrible Rotten Tomatoes score, and Angelina Jolie was, like, trying to defend the movies during both press circuits and was like... I'm just not going to come back. The character has had her role with me because, like, she just didn't want to have that role attached to her any more than she had to have. I looked up to this into this a lot because I was curious what the movies were like. But
I love them.
I would like them.
The number one reason why I like those movies is because she's a female action star, and we don't get those that often. And she's tough, and she's sexy, and she's smart, and it's kind of like... everything is there, and it shows you that a female action star, like, can hold their own movie, and that just, it doesn't happen that often if you look at it compared to male-led action movies. So I'm really excited they're rebooting it. I don't know how Alicia Vikander is going to be, although I've heard she's a terrific actress. I just hope that they
the Danish girl, right?
She's
amazing. Yes,
yeah, but like I just want to make sure the action is right too, because I get very picky about that, so I don't know. But yeah, anyway, we'll have to see. You're right, video game movies don't always go over well. Warcraft kind of,
I mean, Fassbender is an amazing actor, but so is Jolie, and if critics didn't like Tomb Raider, who knows if they're gonna like Assassin's Creed. But you know, it could be a thing of sometimes fans do like adaptations more than critics do, because they're like, oh, I understand it more. Like, I don't know if that's the case with like the Dragon Ball Z movie that came out.
No, 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 absolutely not.
Was it whitewashed? No. It had to have been whitewashed.
I mean, so bad. So bad. Like, it's probably one of the worst movies that I have ever watched. Oh, it's just it's not even one of those terrible movies that, like, you can enjoy in some way. It's just bad.
Really?
It's just bad. In fact, Karen, if you have not seen this movie, as a lover of bad movies, I challenge you to watch it.
Karen, you love this
and come
movie,
back then. To me with your opinion. As someone who likes terrible movies, this is one that it is just so bad that no one can love it, not even its mother.
Okay. Oh, I mean, man. I've watched some Dragon Ball Z in my day, so I have a basis. I
love that anime.
I can do it. There was something else I was gonna say. What was it? with Assassin's Creed, I also just wanted to mention too, comparing it to like other video game movies, The production value seems to be pretty high on this movie, and in particular, they're focusing on a lot as many practical effects as they can nice. Versus CGI, which I always appreciate. So I'm super into that, and I just hope that the quality of the film matches that as well.
I wonder who the studio is, because I think some Disney studio did Prince of Persia, if I'm remembering correctly.
Did they do Prince of Persia, or was it there was another one at the same time? Was it John Carter from Mars?
Oh, I could be messing those two up. You're right.
I don't blame you. I mean, they came out roughly around the same time, and there was a lot of sand in both of them. So.
Wow. It looks like Assassin's Creed is Fox.
Okay. I'm trying to look up Prince of Persia's. Wait. Okay, wait. So, John Carter, was that Jake Gyllenhaal as well?
Maybe. I don't know.
I hate to look it up, because I'm really confused right now.
I just remember it being really bad.
Maybe. I think I'm thinking of that, because that was like, I remember I was like on a bus in Disney, and I saw a Jake Gyllenhaal poster for like a sand action movie.
Taylor Kitsch.
What was that, Karen?
It's Taylor Kitsch.
Is that the studio?
Yeah, no.
That's the actor.
Oh, for the I was like, what the hell's going on? Yes, Prince of Persia doesn't look like it's Disney. Okay, I'm going to settle with that. I could have sworn it was, but no, it is Disney. It is right here. A Disney film, Prince of Persia, Sands of Time, looking at the poster. So, okay, John Carter is also a Disney movie, is it not?
Yeah. Disney just went through this phase where they really liked sand.
Sand, yeah.
They should have taken a lesson from Anakin in Star Wars and just, like, I hate sand.
I don't get it. Yeah, those are really gross.
And it gets everywhere.
It's like they're trying to, like, yeah, that's just weird.
Time for our next section, Two Truths and a Lie. I've nominated Danya to do it this week, so please take it away, Danya. Remember, you have to tell us two truths and a lie, and we have to guess which one is the lie.
Yes, so the theme of my two truths and a lie is Tiny Danya the Overachiever. So the first one I've got is I was part of a choir that was featured at the Eisteddfod. And the Eisteddfod, for anyone who doesn't know what it is, it's basically a huge Welsh festival of literature, art, and music. I passed trials to play for Swansea City Girls in football, aka soccer. And I've competed in archery at an amateur level.
Oh no, this is hard. God, Karen, do you have any clue?
I'm going to say the lie is B.
The football one?
Yeah.
See, that was my first inclination. Because I was like, I think she's really more archery than she's football. So, because I think the singing app must be true. I'm going to go, yeah, with football. Football is the lie.
You're both wrong.
Oh, damn.
I did pass trials to play for Swansea City Girls in football. I was also part of a choir that was featured at the Eisteddfod. I have never competed in archery and at an amateur level.
You're very good at making a lie sound, like, so thought out and real.
Like, I swear you've told me a story about that before, which is crazy.
Done archery lessons, but I've never
competed. That's what I was thinking of.
Okay. That's what I was going off of, too. Like, I do remember you talking about archery at one point.
Yeah, I've done a couple of lessons, but never competed.
And I've never heard you talk about football, ever.
A stick thing. Beat people up.
Didn't you? But I can't imagine you. It's funny, though. I definitely picture you. I picture you, because you're very into Hawkeye, right? And I'm like, okay, she's our own little Katniss Everdeen.
That's why I thought it might trip you up, oh, Danya really loves Hawkeye, so she must also, like, be really into archery. Which I am.
Do you still play football?
It wasn't kendo, Karen, it was judo that I did, which is another martial art. And I was, I didn't throw that one in because I've talked about that a lot on Rewatchable, I think.
Yeah,
of
I do
all
remember
places.
You saying it with Atla.
Did you not beat people up with sticks?
No, I did not.
I don't know you at all, Danya.
What, now, what position did you play in football?
I typically played midfield, which is the position I passed in for Swansea City girls' side. But I have also, and for anyone who has met me in person will know this is absolutely hilarious, I've also been a goalkeeper.
Oh, wow. Can you jump high? Is that how you do that?
I can jump, yes. Okay. So I used to do some ridiculous acrobatics being able to save goals. So,
I think you do come up to my... No, you come up... You definitely come up to, like, I think my chest, right?
I'm 5 foot dead. Yeah. So, like, that's...
That's maybe... That's Yeah, that's below chin level, I think, for me, so...
Little tiny,
yeah, the overachiever. It's very true.
Yes, but that's only like a very small amount of stuff that I did. Like as a kid, I was like ridiculous overachiever. As a kid, I don't know how I found the time to do anything.
You're in good company.
She's all temperature Barbie, isn't she?
Always the overachiever. Mm. Okay. Final section here is our ANA. Ask NATWP anything. And we are pulling questions from Twitter for this. And this one comes from our dear friend and partner, Brooke, at Brooke Wentz on Twitter. And she says, how can I juggle all the shows in the world that Natalie keeps wrecking to me? Thanks, guys. Big fan.
Brooke.
You can't. Natalie creates hours in the day.
I don't, like, Natalie... If Natalie tells me to do something, I listen to her because she's probably right. And I'm sure she's going to love that statement. And she makes me want to put forth more effort to make her happy, which sounds a little weird, but she's so passionate about everything that I'm like, yes, I want to be that passionate about something. And especially with her going through Supernatural and everything right now, I'm like, right? I want to rewatch Supernatural now and maybe actually finish the series.
Same.
And every time that she's just like, you should read this, I'm like, okay, I'll get on that. I'll add it to the pile.
Natalie single-handedly brought me in to the MCU from her love of Loki, because... I first watched The Avengers, and it was, I think I basically watched, like, half of Iron Man on TV, and that was it. So I went in, and I was like, ew, Loki, he's such a one-dimensional character. And she ranted, she did one of those Natalie rants that I love on Twitter, and she was just, Mitch, no, watch Thor, you will get it, that is not okay, you are not allowed to think that way. And I was like, oh, okay, so then I did, and I was like, oh, you're right.
Yeah, Natalie's very good at making me feel really enthusiastic about something that maybe I don't feel enthusiastic about anymore. Like, watching her watch Supernatural has been a delight.
It has. I've never watched the show.
It's been so great. Well, I did. I picked up Supernatural while I was still at university when it first started airing. Friend of mine who was in university dorms, we used to watch it together. Like, whenever the episode dropped, we would go and sit together on, like, the tiny little bed in the university dorm, and we'd watch it on one of our laptops. And like, I followed it right the way through to about season 6-ish, and then I dropped off. I kind of dipped in and out back in it, and just, yeah, there was just something about it, like, doing it all in real time and experiencing it alongside the fandom when the fandom was, like, at its peak of, like, trying to tear each other apart was really difficult. And I think that's what killed my love for it more than the actual show itself. So having Natalie bring in a whole new perspective to it has made me go, maybe I should go back and watch it again, and maybe I should pick it up again. Yeah. A lot of things. I've tried a lot of things because Natalie has talked about how much she loves it. Particularly books. If I haven't read the book already, I tend to pick up books again. There's one exception, though. I know one exception. You do know the exception.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if I should say it.
That's fine. Yeah, so the answer here, Brooke, is you can't. Just do the best you can and hope that one day you are as awesome as Natalie.
True.
Getting into general feedback, Mitch, I'd actually like you to tackle both of these, if you would.
Aw, how sweet. I didn't realize that they were about my ego. Here we go. Finally listening to the first new Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, that being not about the weather podcast. Oops. And yes, Mitch, Prisoner of Azkaban is gorgeous, and I heart it forever. Thank you. I am so happy that you agree with me. And if you agree with me, you should probably, this is my recommendation of the week, go listen to this new EW podcast, oddly titled Binge, which is the most general word you can use for we're interviewing people that created something. I don't know why they're calling it Binge. But they did a Prisoner of Azkaban episode where they're talking to the, I think, set designers or the character designers for it. And they're talking about how hotly loved or hated that movie is, and I was just like, yes, you love it too, because the two hosts in that episode love it, and I was like, I need to make best friends with them, because they're like, it's the most artistic one, it's the one that goes into the most depth of the human psyche, and it makes a really specific message after coming out of Chamber of Secrets, and I was like, yes, 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 yes. So yeah, EW's Binge. They also did a Christopher Columbus interview in the first episode for Sorcerer's Stone, and the fact that Emma Watson wore fake teeth in the outro scene of Sorcerer's Stone, the movie, made headlines, because I think that was a new thing, because they were trying to make Hermione ugly for a bit by making her wear those teeth, and then she couldn't talk through them. So little things like that will come up in those little EW Binge episodes if you want to check those out. And they'll go on to other movie series or something, apparently. I'm not really trying to plug them too much because they're not my favorite. I don't like the, like, I think we do better of just making it more natural. They're so, like, polished and prim and not the kind of podcast I love. But they do love Prisoner of Azkaban, so go check that out at Popflies Liz. And last one is from Jack, and he's at J-A-K-K-F-A-R-R. Do not follow him. Do not, because he said that this week. That, yes, he loves the new intro music. That's great. I did create the intro music with Natalie. But he also asked, how much longer is it going to be until my cats eat me? Because I'm hashtag the lazy avatar. And I'll have him know that, yes, my cat did not only just bite me in this episode while we were recording, but the morning that he tweeted me that, my cat was waking me up and yelling at me because their food bowl was not stacked to the brim. Yes, they were trying to eat me. Okay? So, Jack, you were right. What can I say?
Jack, I love you.
Jack hopefully will come on, as we were saying, for some Nintendo talk when the Switch comes out in March. That'll be fun. Jack's good old bud. Did Watchable, did Glee Chat.
I wonder how much Jack's ego inflates every time we talk about him, because literally every time his name comes up, we'll just go, I love Jack.
He's so Jack lovable. Is so awesome. Yeah. So please do come on, Jack, and you'll be a part of that intro music that you love so much. Ooh.
Yes.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. So, yes, thank you so much. Another awesome episode. If you guys want to ask us a question that we can answer on air, please send us an ask on notaboutheweatherpodcast.com, or you can reach out at us at NATWpodcast on Twitter or Facebook. Please, 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 if you like what we are doing here, give us 5 stars on iTunes. Helps us look legitimate. Also helps other people find us. And, you know, it's just kind of reaffirming that we're doing something cool. And who doesn't like that? So, yes, thank you so much, Mitch and Danya, for joining me this week. And until next time, we'll see you later.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye. Yeah, no, actually, I'm really interested in hearing you talk about the Nintendo Switch, so.
We are going to have fun. Hand clap emoji.
Yes. Okay,
Mitch, so I fucking missed you.